Welcome to Let's Talk, the talk show that addresses the issues facing us today from a Christian perspective. Join Chim every Wednesday as we speak to change makers and add your voice as we unpack real answers to tough issues. And now here's your host, Chim Onyibilanma.
Hi there, welcome to this segment of your show. My guest today is a man whose innovation has transformed the legal industry or the legal profession in Nigeria, Mr. Okpe Olugaza. You're welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, sir.
You know, the first thing I think when I think of the invention you created, the Law Pavilion IT solution, I think of the fact that you're not a lawyer. And a lawyer breaking into this, a lawyer creating this kind of solution would be exceptional. But for a man who is not a lawyer, to create this kind of solution for the lawyers and the judges and the whole legal profession in Nigeria, it's something beyond exceptional. Tell me, how did this inspiration come about?
Okay, thank you very much, sir. Let me first say that before I even thought of this in the first place, I'd always liked law. Maybe because my dad was a disciplinarian, so I just always felt somehow when people are going against the law. Incidentally, I went to Obafemi Law University, Ife, and I studied electrical and electrical engineering. However, because of my interest in law, I did my special electives in law. So in those days, I would read all the just SEL 001, SEL 002, you know. And even beyond that, I would just go and pick law books and read law books just to talk with the lawyers, my lawyer friends, just to argue with them. I mean, I'll be telling them about ages, them generis rule, the literal rule, the golden, you know, and all those ones. I didn't know that God was preparing me for something in the future. So now to the question, one of those days I was in the banking industry, and God actually literally told me that, look, it was time that I needed to leave the place. As at then, I didn't know what I was leaving to do, but yes, I still went ahead. I resigned. I remember I was in a downfall bus going to VI one day, and just there and then, I could still remember the color of the carpool bus. It was white. And God just dropped this in me. And I'll build something for the legal system. And that was when it occurred to me that that's true. I remember that my lawyer friends or law student friends then would always spend time in the library looking for precedents, you know, and so on, case laws to support their write-ups. And so I just went into it, and the rest, as they say, is history. I mean, today I can look back, and it's been God all the way.
When you say it's been God, I can't help bringing up the issue of your walk with the Lord. When did you come to meet the Lord?
Okay, I met the Lord, you know, in those days, they always tell you, if you don't remember your birthday, there are two birthdays. You must remember your own physical birthday, and you must remember your spiritual birthday. So I remember it very well, 31st August 1988.
Wow.
But, you know, yes, you know, in those days.
And I came to the Lord 2 years, exactly 2 years before then, 31st August 1986.
Wow. Interesting. But, you know, I was in secondary school then, just entering secondary school. But it was when I got to SS1, that was around 1990, that I understood what it meant to have the baptism of the Holy Spirit. And I think from then my Christian life took a different turn. The fact that I began to hear God completely turned things around for me. So I mean, in little things, you just say, do this, do that, and that's been what has, I mean, even in business, it's something that a number of times, that's what has completely changed the trajectory for us. Little things, you just tell us, do this, I mean, just come as a nudge. But that's my story about coming to know the Lord.
Of course, when you talk about hearing the Lord, one can't help but think of the fact that if you had not learned to distinguish between ideas that are just your ideas and something from God, this could have just run through your head and you'll go,
sure,
you know, me do something for the legal sector and just let it slide. But here you are today, and not only are we thanking God for your life, but many lawyers and judges and all the rest are thanking God or at least grateful for the kind of innovation that a law pavilion has brought. Tell me, How did you think that you as a person, like how, the question for me is phrased almost like, how dare you imagine that you as an outsider will be able to go into something like the legal profession? You know, if you talk about legalistic, they are the definition of legalistic. They have conservative ways of doing things. They have how they've done things over decades in the legal profession. And now here you are coming to change a lot of that. Did you anticipate, did you imagine that it was going to be easy in the beginning? And what did you face?
Okay, let me start with, naturally, I don't know, somehow I like experimenting things. So even when I wanted to go to pick my career choice, as of then, my parents were advised, they were tilted more towards medicine. Go and study medicine. And I could remember then, in my mind, I like to experiment, so I felt I wouldn't be able to experiment with human lives. Mm. I mean, if you are doing medicine, I could be wrong, but that was the understanding I had then, that I can't experiment with human lives, but if I go for engineering, look, I can build things. If it doesn't work, I can start all over again. You know, you can't do such with human lives. So that's what took me to engineering. Mm. And I'd always known that my engineering is not just to just be regimented in one space. I wanted to explore. I wanted to build things. I wanted to do things that others haven't done before. Mm. In fact, naturally, I believe it's God that put it there. If I'm doing what every other person is able to do, I don't feel fulfilled. I want to do something that's a little bit difficult, that's not done before. So now, coming to the legal space, when we started, actually, I knew it would be a little bit challenging because I was an outsider from the industry, but okay, let me say, I didn't know it would be this challenging. It was such that even when we started, I can remember it was NBA conference, the first time we launched in 2007 in Ilorin. At the conference, you know, we got there and we were introducing lawyers to electronic law reports, and then a number of lawyers came to our stand and they made fun of us that, look, this is not possible. You can't, I mean, as lawyers, we are conservative. We must read our books. That's how we were taught, you know, and I smiled. In fact, one of them said that, look, he called the name of one judge and said, look, you are telling me that I will get to the front of this judge and I will say, my Lord, it's an electronic law report. Then my Lord will send me out of court. I smiled and I said, yes, I know. This is not a sprint. Is a marathon. I mean, it was clear to me that it's not something that will happen in one day or in one year. Now, fast forward over the years, it happened that it's even the judges that embraced it much faster than the lawyers. And the moment the judges embraced it, the lawyers began to follow suit. And I'm very happy, I'm glad, and more importantly, I'm very grateful to God that yes, we've made a change, an impact in the industry. But the real driving force is not necessarily about the making lawyers adopt a law report. It's actually the question of justice. And just permit me, let me say this ahead. A little. I heard somewhere, and I strongly believe it, that poverty is not absence of resources. It's not lack of resources, but it's absence of justice. Mm. So a number of times you watch any developed country, any developed nation, that things are thriving, that the business environment is moving very well, is because they have a very efficient justice system. Mm. So for us, I mean, for me, the first thing that came to my mind is, how can we solve the inefficiency in the justice system in Nigeria? And that's what made us, okay, let's look at it. What are the issues we are having? I realized that, okay, as I said, God dropped it first in my mind that, look, the legal system was largely manually driven. Mm. So we felt like, okay, how can we automate this legal system? They spend so much of their time, lawyers spend time, at least about 50% of time, 40 to 60% of time, looking for authorities, doing research, looking for legal information, and which we think is a very wonderful job. We just felt that, okay, if we are able to make that a little bit more efficient, they'll be able to render speedy service to their clients. Judges as well spend so much time researching, you know, all the submissions, they have to research it and then distill the actual position of the law. If we can help them, give them a solution that will help them do that, speed it up, then the common man on the streets will get justice faster and more easily. And those are the things that we're doing. The challenges we face, quite a number of them, from the challenge of funding to the challenge of getting the skilled staff, which I'm very grateful I have quite a number of them, And much more importantly, let me just code it, the challenge of the Nigerian factor. I'm sorry, but it's
Please
something that
important.
A lot of businesses face, and especially if you really want to be ethical. I mean, we've had several situations where we've had contracts given to other people, and all on the basis of, are you going to inflate the price or are you going to do this? And everybody in the organization knows that we are first ethical before we go after the money. So most of this, we will always turn them down. But God has been faithful. That's what I would say. And well, maybe as the interview goes, we still talk more.
This is an important point you're bringing up there, and I would love us to talk a bit more about it. But one of the questions running through my mind is that for you to even start this, if I understand Law Pavilion, it gives you access to lawyers and legal professionals and judges and all that to be able to do what you said.
Yes, sir.
Assess information, process information at a faster, more efficient speed than they used to do, so as to be able to deliver justice and law, you know, faster. Now, for you to be able to have access to all of the data, the law reports from way back, how did you get that done? I mean, I'm just assuming that it's not there for the taking by everybody.
No. So when we started, we first went to the Supreme Court to get permission from authorization from them. Fortunately, at a point, I think my dad linked me with one Supreme Court justice to just make an inquiry, what's even going on. And incidentally, at that time, you know, I was able to meet with the then head of IT and said, they're also looking into such projects. So, candidly, the moment he told me that they were looking at such projects, I felt discouraged that, so why am I
even
still,
doing
why
this?
Am I doing it when
okay,
they will start doing
it?
But I give it to my brother. He's now a professor of law, interestingly. My brother told me that, okay, do you think government can really do this?
Wow.
That it will take the private entrepreneurship mind to get it done because it's a long haul. And I felt, okay, if God is telling me to do it, and of course, here is you are in the profession, you're saying we should go ahead. We decided to go on. We had to apply. We had to get the hard copies of the judgments. We had to spend days, years. In fact, when we started, it took us about 3 years to even come to the market because we had to keep scanning the judgments, proofreading them, you know, converting them to database, building the solution. But it took us long. In fact, to be able to get those, because all those records were largely undigitized. So we first had to take about 3 years digitizing all these records, and we went as far back as 1960 till date because we felt it's important we have a good comprehensive compilation of judgments. And well, thank God today we still have the largest compilation such. Yeah, it took a long time, and as I still speak to you, we're still scanning, we're still digitizing, we're still going over and over it again, and we're happy doing it.
Let's talk a bit more about, because what people don't understand is how much goes into pioneering. The amount of discouragement, you've mentioned a few. You mentioned people laughing at the possibility of you bringing about any change. We sit down today and we look at the change that Law Pavilion has brought. Maybe we'll talk about the changes first of all. What has significantly changed with Law Pavilion's entrance into the legal space?
First, a number of lawyers come to us today and they just say, thank you. I mean, just 2 days ago, I was in Abuja, and a senior lawyer, a professor of law, came to me and said, Okwe, thank you for how you have made our work easier. And that's one thing that also motivates us. So they have that, we have those feedbacks. A number of times, some judges, like my particular judge, that said, Okwe, thank you, because with this, I no longer adjourn. I give, in some cases, I give bench ruling. Immediately the matter comes in. In fact, there was one, I was telling that, look, two lawyers were arguing on a particular matter that she did not even know anything really about, but all she just did was put in, with her laptop in court, put in the issue of law on Law Pavilion, and then it gave her about 20 authorities. So she allowed the lawyers to argue back and forth. And they said, counsel, have you considered this case of this, this case of this? And all of them are just like, this must be a witch. She didn't know all these cases. No, we see that, but in empirical data, I did a little comparison. In 2012, I think that was when Court of Appeal officially bought Law Pavilion for all the judges. And part of that was to help see how they can to ensure speedy delivery of judgment, but more importantly, to also help cross for selection of ideas, such that when the judgment is delivered, let's say Sokoto Division, the judge in Calabar Division can quickly see it within 48 hours, and then when the judge in Calabar is delivering a judgment, is not in conflict or at variance with what the established precedents. So we did that, and then they graciously started using it. And I went back to check the statistics. In the space of 10 years, the pace at which each judge delivered judgments increased by 3 times.
Wow.
And I looked at it, and at times when we consider this, we're happy that, thank God, there is an impact in the in the industry. There is still a whole lot to be done. We're still, in fact, right now we're introducing AI to both justice delivery for judges to use and even for lawyers. But at least we are seeing some baby steps that have been taken. We're seeing some impacts that have been and have been made in the industry, and we're happy to be part of that by the grace of God.
You are listening to Let's Talk, interesting conversations on today's issues. Stay tuned.
At least we are seeing some baby steps that have been taken. We're seeing some impacts that have been and have been made in the industry, and we're happy to be part of that by the grace of God.
3 times faster is not baby step, because I'm thinking of the ordinary citizen at the receiving end. Imagine being able to, instead of waiting 3 years or 10 years, getting your judgment, getting justice faster.
Yeah.
Getting relief, getting that money that was owed to you and all that. And I'm thinking of the end user.
Yeah.
Because what you're doing is not just making the legal, like you said in the beginning, it's actually giving justice to the masses.
Yes, sir.
And I've been studying the book of Exodus in recent times. And many of the things you're saying this morning just ties up with the things I'm saying. First of all, there's the issue of how you got the idea. And I think of Moses' parents. They didn't hear an angel. They didn't get one big vision. They just got a thought that this boy is a godly boy, and don't let him be killed. Mm. It was more convenient to bow to Pharaoh and just let it go. But they didn't let that idea go. It's more convenient to just, like you said, when you went to the court there and you said, they're still doing this, why should I bother? But you didn't let the idea go. And I think there are many viewers also who God is dropping ideas into their mind. And they need to be conscious that God speaks to us like that. And sometimes it's powerful, like it's powerful, life-changing things that God is dropping into our mind. Because who could have imagined that that thought you had in that public transport that day is changing the public in this way? And who could have imagined that the thought that parents of Moses had is going to produce Moses, the lawgiver? And then the second thing, of course, is Moses later on, and just the discouragement he faced, and the things that came against him as he tried to pursue another God-given vision. You've talked a bit about the challenges you faced. You've mentioned them. You talked about finances and all that. But can you take us back a bit about some of those, you know, moments when you felt like it's better I just stop here. It's best maybe I will, you know, and then changes that God brought.
There are so many
moments. Give us a few, please.
So many moments. So the first one is the fact that when we were starting Law Pavilion, I had absolutely nothing. In fact, it was so funny, when I left the bank, the first month, I knew someone had told me before that if what you have is not enough, then it's a seed. So we were in church that day, and I can't remember if we were doing a fundraiser or something. And then I just started to empty everything I had and say, God, this is a seed. So I gave everything. So on our way back home, I was just telling my wife that, I have dropped everything. No, it's a seed. And she looked at me and said, and she was just about telling me
that she too dropped everything,
that it was a seed. And, you know, we both agreed that, look, God is the one that will sustain us. Having said that, you know, it's easier said in the beginning.
Yeah.
At least I think for the first 2 or 3 years of starting and running the pavilion, we were down to nothing consistently. I can remember those are the days when you scrub through your pockets, just see whether you have 110 naira, that's 100 naira, that's something that then you just be able to use it to buy something to eat. But we're doing this joyfully. There were times it occurred to me that, look, who sent me message? That's the truth. Because I just felt that if I remained in my bank, I mean the bank rather, it was in my bank. If I remained in the banking sector, I mean, I would have been in the position. I was moving very fast at that time. I was in my 20s and I was already an assistant manager. You know, I knew I had God. So it would always take me by that, God, you are in this. You just have to see us through. And you know, a number of times you get some very small testimonies that just strengthen you. It may not be something big. Let me give you an example.
Please do.
An example was when we were, at the time when I first resigned, I started Los Babylon. I had gotten from a leasing company to get some of my electronics, and I realized that we were about defaulting. They had sent me a message that, look, if we are not able to pay by so-so time, then they will come and retrieve everything. And just a day to that time, someone just called me from, you know, out of the blues, and I didn't discuss anything with him earlier. And he said, send me your account number. I sent the account number. What he sent was just the exact amount that would pay for that, for the lease. And it was a big confirmation for me, no matter how small, it was just 20,000 naira then. But it was a big confirmation that, look, God is there. He said, I will guide you even when you walk through the waters. It will not overflow you. It means we will fill the waters, but you know. And such little experiences kept nudging us on that, look, God will see us through. Yeah, by the grace of God, it's not the same. There was another one, major challenge that, I remember that was around 2015, 2016, there, but when the country was in recession.
Yeah.
And we had looked at the landscape of the industry. We felt we needed to move from just electronic law reports to legal analytics. Now, legal analytics was to expand the boundaries of law, give different sides and views, the history of the jurisprudence, you know, and all such. And then we wanted to start that, and we mapped out, of course, do a normal business plan. And I saw that we would need a large chunk of money, which we didn't have. So discussing with the board, we felt that, okay, we needed to raise funds, and the fund wasn't coming quickly as we wanted. And then the first Sunday in January 2016, I can't forget, I walked into church and they were reading a Bible passage. That was where Jesus fed 5,000 people with five loaves and two fishes. The moment I heard that, I can't remember what the preacher was, sermon was all about. The moment I heard that passage, God just said, start that project. And it's like, God, we agreed this thing would cost us 300 million naira. How will I just go and start a project without having anything? And God then said, it was this passage in the Bible that says, he that observes the wind will not sow. It was a tough one. I looked at it. I needed to talk to the board. And the country was in recession. It's just no way. And it became an issue. You know, I told everybody in the office we had to go this route. Even people in my office, my colleagues, felt that MD, without funds, how can we engage on this? We had to recruit more people, you know, and all those at the time. There were issues on the board that, look, you have to, everybody's downsizing you. You want to upsize. And the thing keeps him. Five loaves and two fishes. Now, you know, but even, yes, I knew I had to obey God because I knew how God talks to me. I knew if I didn't do that, it was clear to me that I would be disobeying. So I had to find a way of managing it. You know, it would have been easier if, we went into it, and the moment we went into it, money came in. Nothing. We started. That was when I realized that at a point when Moses wanted to cross the Red Sea. God just told him, point the rod, and Red Sea parted. They saw the ground, dry ground, before they started. And then in River Jordan, go on until they reach a place. Real to me, because we started the project. In the middle of the project, we were completely out of funds and we couldn't pay staff salaries. So you can imagine walking to the office and 100 people are just looking at you, MD. I mean, we had to start giving people stop gap. We call it stop gap. So if your salary was 100,000, maybe today we can pay you 20,000. Next week we can pay another 10,000. In fact, they nicknamed me stop gap. You know, it was tough, and I would go back to God. God, but you said we should do this. Mm-hmm. And I kept getting that confirmation, go ahead. At the point when we had issues, God was really, okay, you must stop this and this and that. It got to a point, candidly, I had to say, okay, I can't disobey God, and I also don't want to be as if I'm stubborn to the board. Okay, let me leave the scene. And it was then I turned my resignation letter. That I'm sorry, this is what God is asking me to do. If you feel it's otherwise, then this is what I can do. When I turned my resignation letter that night, all members of everybody on the board called out, no, you can't leave. Let's see what we can do. So go ahead, do it, but you have to make sure
it works.
That it works. I can smile now. It was a tough one then. When we released that project, a year later, it became a complete game changer for us.
Wow.
We did what we called What's in Gold and invited all Supreme Court justices based on that project. We were able to distill how many authorities, how many pronouncements, of law each judge had been. We were able to give out awards. We were the ones that gave the most cited pronouncements in Nigerian, in the history of Nigerian jurisprudence. And we celebrated the Supreme Court justices because we felt that, look, they've done a lot which society never saw. That activity changed the trajectory for us. The judiciary became so receptive of us much more. And then it also opened several doors for us. I mean, there were offices ordinarily. If I would go there, I would spend 5 hours. But because, the former CGNs were at the event, it just opened doors. Again, by the time we launched fully, it just changed the narratives between us and our competitors. And since then, it's almost as if we were having almost a monopoly. And I look back and it's like, God, this could only have been you. And I felt that was a big moment for me.
Wow.
There have been several ones, but that one is like in gold in my mind.
Wow.
Because I felt that at times when God leads us, he doesn't tell us how long it will take.
True.
He doesn't tell us the challenges we meet along the way. Yes, I just paraphrased it.
I know.
But God was there.
Wow.
Within that period, we had to go for NBA conference. And at times where God leads, we wanted to take about 70 of us because we were doing something for the conference, at the conference then. And it's like, God, we don't have money to execute this conference. And God said, go. It was still in the middle of all these developments.
Yeah.
God said, go. And it's like, God, how can I go? The only money I have is to pay for bus, rent a bus, and take these people there. Their hotel accommodation, their feeding, everything. I didn't have it. And God said, go. Okay. We began to plan. I went to Abuja one day, and I met one man, one of my mentors. And just said, Okpe, how are you doing? I said, fine. I can't remember the question he asked, but said, do you have money? We don't. Don't have one. He said, okay, when I get back to Lagos, let's talk. In the middle of it, we were still executing, and we began to talk. We were to leave for the Port Harcourt conference, and we went for the conference. But when I landed in the conference, that was all the money we had. I couldn't tell my people no money for feeding. The following day, I can't believe it. We had approached other banks. They were always asking for collateral. This man spoke to an investment house, a commercial house. They made arrangements without signing, without any collateral, just on the integrity that, Okpe, I trust you. They gave us, I think, about 30 million naira thereabouts. Just transferred it to our account, and we executed the project. That conference remained one of the best conferences we have ever had.
Wow.
But it's like, God, how do you? So taking steps of faith, I have seen it in business. I keep seeing it in business. I can only thank God that this could only have been God, because the way he has helped us to move, I know that if it had not been for God, we would never have been able to reach half of the trajectory that we have passed. We still have a long way to go.
Today you are the leading, or even the leader, in the area of IT solution for the legal space in Nigeria. Are you also in other countries of Africa?
Right now, a couple of other countries use our products, but it's the Nigerian content.
Okay.
So that's the next
we're
working on, because we're by the grace of God, this is another story for another day.
Yeah.
How we got to start exhibiting at IBA, that's International Bar Association. Okay. And with all modesty, we still remain the only African country that's been exhibiting in IBA for almost 8 years now.
Somebody who goes there tells me you just stand out.
we try to represent.
The only African agency there.
Yes, and what that has also helped us to achieve is that we try to push the frontiers. Mm. We try to ensure that, look, whatever we do is not only according to Nigerian standards, but competes globally. And in that way as well, we're looking at being the gateway to the legal industry, to navigating the legal regulatory maze of Africa. Mm. And that's why I want to go to other African countries to also see how we can improve the services, make their legal services more efficient. And as I said, and I always say it, it's not about the money for us. We are in business to make money, but more importantly, to make impact. Mm. And we want that impact felt by the common man. And maybe I'll just round up with this. When we're releasing a new product for the general public, there's this passage God gave me, Isaiah 42 verse 1, where he says, this is my servant, I have chosen him, I've strengthened him by my spirit. He said he will bring justice to the nations. Mm. So our expansion to other African countries is we want to bring justice to every nation in Africa. And we believe that's the ministry God has given
that
us.
That seems to be your continuous driving force.
Yes.
This thing of bringing justice to the nations, to the masses.
Yes,
you were telling me before we came on air, a particular new product you guys are working on. You want to talk briefly on that before we round up?
Okay. Yes, sir. That's justice. Just is, but we call it justice, not just playing around with words. Now, justice is, we've looked at the, starting with Nigeria, there's something called the broken window theory. The broken window theory is if you have a block of flats and one window is broken, if after 3 months, 6 months, for a while rather, if the window is still broken and it's not repaired, after about 6 months or 1 year, go back to that place, many more windows would have been broken along the block. The reason is that window that was broken and there was no redress, nothing to repair it, is sending signals to everybody that, look, anything goes here. There's no law here, no one is in charge. And so anything will be done and everybody goes scot-free. And we strongly believe that that's the challenge we have with Nigeria. And that's when I said, I also believe that, look, poverty is not lack of resources, it's absence of justice. Because when someone commits a crime, and Ecclesiastes even said it, that when crime is not speedily punished, then the heart of men begin to think evil. Now, when there's a crime, when there's a violation of rights, and then nobody, you can't seek a redress, even when you try to seek redress, it takes almost 30 years to prosecute your matter, it's indirectly telling everyone that, look, anything goes on here, I can trample on your rights and you can't do anything. I can do anything, I can drive one way, nobody will. And it becomes a vicious circle of non-performance generally. And I'm sorry to say, these are some of the things we're experiencing, not just in Nigeria, in Africa. And that's why we feel that, look, we need to bring back that culture of rule of law to everyone. Number one, let everyone know their rights. Let everyone understand their rights. Then it's not only to know your rights. At the same time, when you know your rights, you also have a channel to report violation of such rights. And then it will be followed up. The regulatory, you know, the regulatory agencies. So I walk into an hospital, for example, and I'm poorly treated. I mean, I've had several of such cases. I don't know who to report to. The general public should be able to know that, look, I can report to so-so regulatory agency and in different, within school or whatever. That's what we try to link people to, let them know their rights, let them know what the position of law is in a simple way, and then if they are violated, they can report to right people. And then we're actually having something we call the justice dashboard. So, Peter Drucker said, what you don't measure, you cannot manage. We must be able to measure justice in Nigeria. We must be able to know, look, when people have issues with law, how easy, how quickly do they get justice? And by the time we begin to do that, it begins to gradually change the culture. When we have that culture of rule of law, somebody will not just get a contract and not do the contract simply because nothing will happen. Because you know that, look, the arm of justice will catch up with you, or the arm of law will catch up with you. Everyone begins to have a rethink, and that's why we're releasing the project. At the same time, there's also the part of the criminal justice system in Nigeria, wherein it's actually a, you know, crime happens most of the time in darkness, in secrecy. Now, the way we are doing it is, it's difficult for people to come out as witness. But with technology, you can have anonymous witness. I'm seeing a scene of crime, and we see all this in movies. I'm seeing a scene of crime, I'm witnessing it, I can take a recording and then upload. It's going to be stored on blockchain. And then when it gets to court, investigators can have access to that. And then if there's an AI layer on it that profiles the faces. And so if you pick a suspect, you can easily run it through the facial recognition system and says, ah, this person was seen in the, you know, those are areas where technology can actually help in criminal and in criminal justice. Again, if there's an issue, an incident coming on, even if I'm not the victim, I can put it on the app, and people within 10 kilometers radius of that place that have the same app, we get notified that, look, something is happening here, and then it gives heightened vigilance for everyone. It becomes a community and policing kind of thing. We become one, each one, one another's keeper. And we think that's the kind of responsibility that we need to give to everyone on the street. Government alone can't do it. All of us have to be vigilant together. And for us, that's part of giving, making things easy for us Nigerians. And I believe it's Nigerians that will solve the problem of Nigerians. Wow. And I believe justice is the foundation. In fact, the Bible says that the throne of God is built on the foundation of justice and righteousness. And this is what we want to do. The kingdom of God will come to Nigeria, and we are trusting God to help us. It's been a long road, but...
Wow. As we close, I think of, you said, Africans are the ones that bring the solution for Africans. And you think of many, many young people across the continent as you travel around without job, without hope. And yet, your story is saying that maybe the ideas God is planting in the hearts of many, and they need to wake up to those ideas. They need to, perhaps it's a connection with God, being able to hear God, being able to grab those ideas, and being able to go through the toughness of paying the price, even that thing of like having zero and just going on. I mean, that's been quite inspiring today, hearing about going on with, because people say, where do I get the money? And you're saying, just do it. Just keep going and keep going and keep going. And I want that to really inspire people. But thank you so much for sharing your story. Before we go, you, the people in their different levels, here you are, a young man who decided to change things, and you have changed things in the legal space, landscape, and you have brought solutions that many are thanking God for, yet it started with one idea. Would you please give your last word?
Okay. Thank you, sir. What I would say is what I heard someone say in one birthday. He said the cry of any newborn baby is a solution to one problem on earth. It's for every one of us to understand what solution our cry is meant to solve. It might not be easy, it might be tough, but please make sure you find that problem and you solve it. It was one of these American presidents, former presidents, that said, do not think of what the state can do for you, but think of what you can do for the state. I'm taking the words of Nigerian national anthem, arise, O compatriots. It's important that, yes, we can see greener pastures, but God did not make mistake dropping us in Nigeria. Not on my turf, within my own lifetime, by the grace of God, I want to see how I can make Nigeria much better than I met it. I can't solve all the problems, but the little area where I know this is my cry that God has put in my mouth, I want to solve it. And I will encourage every one of us, let's look inwards. We can solve Nigeria's problem. People can begin to come to Nigeria because we decided to do something. And that's it. In your own little space, in your own little corner, make a change, make a mark, and heavens will reward you for it.
Wow. Thank you so much, Okwe. We'll be speaking to Okwe Olugaza, and he's the founder of the Law Pavilion IT solution that the legal industry uses in Nigeria, and hopefully, like he said, will soon be rolled out in other nations. And what a beautiful way to wrap up this discussion, because you are basically saying we all have been put here to solve a problem. Find the problem you're supposed to solve, and that's why you're here. Thank you so much, Okpe, for coming. And thank you for what you're doing for this country and for the continent.
Thank you, sir.
God bless you.
And you too.
And thank you so much for joining us this week. We'll see you next week.
Thank you for joining us today on Let's Talk. Let's continue the conversation via WhatsApp on 079-473-7208. You can also follow us on Facebook by searching Let's Talk and on Twitter using hashtag ChimTalk. We trust that you'll tune in next week at the same time. Take care and God bless.